All right, this is Jack Stern Jr. continuing an interview with Jack Stern Sr. on September 2nd, 2019. All right, Dad, so we were just talking about some of your best memories of growing up in Kilkirk. What about you and your brother MG when you were young? There was a zoo in Kilkirk, right?
No.
A zoo? Is that right? I thought you told me there was a zoo.
No.
I thought he told me that.
I don't know. No. We had no zoo there in Kilkirk at all that I know of. The block we lived in, there were the two of us, Jim Gammon next door had a brother, and there were three wolf boys down the alley from us. So there were seven of us right there within spitting range of each other, and we had a lot of time together. I really didn't spend a whole lot of time with MG growing up because he was there all the time, but I was too busy with the Gammon boys, who were closer to my age. He was 6 years older than I was. So Jim and I and Dick Lee were together most of the time. But it was a good time. I think we enjoyed ourselves completely.
What'd you like to do?
at that time we had two empty lots very close to the house. One was baseball, one was football. Jim and I were on them both continually. I think the lot next to his house is still empty, as I recall. And used to dig trenches because we were very into World War II at that time. We would go next door to the Fulton house and get in there outside place they had to store wood and protect that and all. We were very active soldiers as a life grew up. That's probably why MG and I both continued our ROTC adventure and both joined the Army, and I spent 20 years in the Army, enjoyed it very much.
So you liked the Army?
Liked the Army. It was a good job. Saw lots, traveled lots. Only had one unfortunate experience, but I had three. First overseas assignment was in Taiwan, where Kate and our two sons accompanied us there. And one of the things that sticks with me is I was assigned to a little place called Chai Yi, which is down country from Taipei. And one of my jobs was running the post, the PX, and as for running the post exchange, we had a snack bar there. Kate used to be a counter person at our local hangout in Kilkirk called Pete's, and there they used to make the standard Midwestern item of barbecue or breaded pork tenderloin in a sandwich. Kate introduced that to Chai Yi Taiwan in about 1958 or 9. And introduce it as a breaded tenderloin sandwich, and it she made a hit with it. In fact, I just saw a item in the newspaper, or I don't know, I'm on the internet, the fact that the item of food that Iowa is most noted for is breaded pork tenderloins, which I thought was very interesting. Anyhow, came back, had a good tour in Taiwan about a month before we decided we were scheduled to leave. Kate told me she was going to divorce me when we got back to the States. I knew there was nothing I could do about it, so I said, fine. Got divorced 1961. Went to the career course for field artillery officers in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And for about 9 months, put in, an assignment overseas in South Korea after that. And I was up there from 62 to 64. No, 62 to 63. Came back to assignment in Fort Benning, Georgia, where I was assigned to the 11th Air Assault Division. Was very happy there, got a pretty good assignment there. The 11th Air Assault Division was later turned into the 1st Cavalry Air Division Air Mobile. And we went to Vietnam, South Vietnam, then in August of 1965.
But something else had happened before then, right?
Yes, yes.
You had a blind date in there somewhere.
Blind date. And Judy drank scotch and I drank scotch and about...
Wait, Mom was a scotch drinker?
She was then.
I have a hard time seeing that.
Four months after a blind date, I think we got married. I think it was about 4 months. Might have been five.
That's pretty quick.
Pretty quick. And this was after I was been in South Korea, and I came back and met Judy, and we got married in March or April of 65. The young man running the interview was married or was born in April of 65. No, we got married in 64. Yeah,
that's right.
And he was born in April of 65.
Yeah.
And then in August of 65, I debarked to go to South Vietnam with the 1st Cav Division. And I was then assigned...
So 4 months after I was born, you're on the boat, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was supposed to go and get airborne jump qualified. And I flew back in a helicopter from Fort Stewart, Georgia, and flew back to take my airborne qualifications. And got back and... they said, well, you know, you wear glasses. You can't jump as glasses with glasses on. I said, well, I wear them, you know. I've worn them all day, every day since third grade, and which was a good 20 years at that time. And they said, well, you're not qualified. So I was a non-parachute qualified officer in the parachute qualified battalion. So I was kind of out of place in the 1st Cav Division. So I was assigned to another battalion, and I was then given the job of being a artillery liaison officer with a cavalry battalion. So what it was is I was a captain at that time, and I had three second lieutenants who were the forward observers. And they were their job was to go with the infantry companies and see where the targets were and to call back fire. Well, we've been in country in South Vietnam for about 2 months, and the job we'd been assigned to, the battalion had been assigned to protecting the South Korean battalion when they moved down to South Vietnam. So we were then out on Highway 19 protecting the South Koreans. And so two of the companies in the infantry battalion we were with were then assigned to go down to the Idrang Valley to support the 7th Cavalry. And I had no idea what was going on, but I knew that two of my forward observers, my second lieutenants, were down in the Idrang. They'd been down there for a day when the battalion I was assigned to got orders to go to the Idrang Valley. So we took off in our helicopter. I was with the battalion, the infantry battalion commander and his operations officer, and we were flying down to the Idrang Valley, not really knowing where we were going. And I was sitting in the back seat of the helicopter looking at my map, and I had the ability then to read maps. I do have it now too, but we've been flying over this country, and I poked his operations officer and I said, I think we're flying here, which is in Cambodia. And they started talking to the pilots, and yes, we were flying over Cambodia. So we were lost. So we turned around and came back to the Idrang Valley in South Vietnam. We landed. There was an artillery battalion or artillery battery there, and we landed in close to their position. And the two companies out of our battalion were out fighting the Viet Cong up in LZ X-ray, where they were badly hurt. Not badly hurt, they were hurt. But they were on their way back to our unit, to their headquarters. So they came back, and they got back about 4 o'clock the afternoon we landed. And 6 o'clock, we were hit by the North Vietnamese. That's the night I spent on the telephone all night with another field artillery officer who was with the brigade. As a brigade liaison, artillery liaison officer, calling in all kinds of fire support, air support, and artillery support. That was the night we had 144 bullet holes in the tent the next morning, which is all right because that was 72 bullets in and 72 bullets out.
As long as they didn't...
as I came out, they kept on going.
So you're... Your tent must have been, were you dug down?
We were dug down. That's first time in country we dug in also, which made sense.
So how deep was the hole you dug for the tent?
Oh, a couple, 3 feet, but it was enough that the dirt we got out of the hole we put around the sides, so it elevated the protection a little bit. And the next morning when
so we... Were those... Where was the fire coming from?
From the North Vietnamese battalion that hit us.
Was it sniper fire?
No, they were full. When the book came out, we were young and soldiers.
We were soldiers
and
once,
young, or whatever
we,
it was.
We were
by,
soldiers once and young, right?
Yeah, right, by Hal Moore, who I happen to know. They had an interview with the North Vietnamese general who commanded the unit to hit us. And in it he says, well, they were set to hit our unit at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but they were so badly disorganized from the B-52 strike that they hit the night before, they didn't hit us until 6 p.m. So that allowed those extra 2 hours it took them to get organized and hit us, allowed that our two companies who were with the 7th Cav to come back and take defensive positions around us.
And for you to get dug in.
Yeah.
So if it weren't for those 2 hours.
Yeah, I might have a different story.
Right.
And the next morning,
What was it like for you when you read that in the book and realized that?
Kind of a little bit shaken up.
Yeah.
The next morning after they hit us, I walked out. I was able to walk a distance to a bomb crater, one of the airplanes I'd called in for close air support, and counted three North Vietnamese dead around that bomb crater. So, I mean, we're talking about, from maybe here to the street, which is, 100 feet, maybe?
Yeah.
They were that close. So we survived that night.
So they were armed with what? Kalashnikovs? Is that what the...
They were armed with just their AK-47s or whatever they had.
Yeah.
I know the artillery battery was armed with the weapon for their 105 howitzers, which was the exploding ammunition that when it left the barrel of the guns, it immediately spread into little pellets and went forward, and they were using that on the North Vietnamese also. So we got out. I had my two forward observers on the other with the seventh cab. One was evacuated almost as soon as he got back, evacuated to a hospital and was later returned to the States. The other one was Lieutenant Fuzz, who he was trying to grow a beard but it wasn't very successful. He was hurt but not badly, and he came back to duty in Vietnam. And that was about the length of the...
So you didn't lose anybody.
Didn't lose anybody.
That's kind of amazing, isn't it?
Very amazing. I later on lost a forward observer, I think in February, on another operation.
What month was the IDRANG?
November 18th.
So you've been there how long?
In country?
Yes.
2 months. We got there sometime in middle of September.
And that was the most action?
The biggest action I saw for the whole trip. I later was put in charge of a artillery battery, which was, we moved all over South Vietnam. One time, my battery was the furthest inland and north of any other battery we had. And I say inland because we had plenty on the coast, Da Nang and all there, but none of them in inland. We were north of Con Tum, actually north of Da Nang, which was really very close to the Cambodian border. And well, we had the extended range on the M105 howitzers. It was called a 102. We would go in went in to that position and started to send out harassing fires, which is just intermediate, wherever it goes, fires. And with the extended range, the North Vietnamese were coming in big time the next morning because of the fires, because they knew how far the range was before. But they were not familiar with the extended range on the M-102, so they came in. pretty much wanting to get out. We flew in, let's see.
What do you mean they came in?
They came into our base.
Oh,
where
surrendered.
Because they weren't happy with being shot at. We flew in with Caribous, the old fixed wing airplane, and we were extracted. I think we had CH-47s, the Chinooks.
So it was, I remember you telling me once when you were a kid that you found the war frustrating because you never really felt like you all had the authority to move forward and win, right?
Right. We'd go in and take some place, turn around and come back. That's what we did at the IDRANG. went down there. The 7th Cav lost a number of people, but we didn't stay. We won the body count, but not the land.
And you think that was because of the politics of the war?
Well, without doubt, because those were, I'm sure those orders came from much higher up than my level, and even our general's level. I think that's what it was all about. It was a political war, not a military war.
It must have been frustrating to be a part of that, huh?
Well, you didn't really realize it, what was going on, because, you know, you saw that you were making some progress. But then when you got back and were able to see the whole thing together, you decided, well, why was I there?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you survived. We're glad you did.
Yep, thank you. I'm happy to be here. And you were a big bouncy boy when I got home.
I bet.
Yep.
So what was that like coming back? was it hard to adjust?
Well, came back to...
Oh yeah, you told me this morning you didn't even come back to Columbus. You didn't come back to Fort Benning, right?
No.
You came straight back to...
Came back to Fort Jackson. No.
No.
Came
Fort
back
Sill.
To Fort Sill.
Yeah.
Came back to Fort Sill, was assigned housing, and I was assigned to the...
I guess Mom and I met, they sent us there? We met you there?
No, I think your mother came up from Benning and met me in Atlanta when I flew back to Atlanta. Then we moved, we came back to Benning, had the military come in and pick us up, pick our household up, and we drove out to, I think I had a trip home to see the family, and then we drove. Yeah, that's what happened. I went home, drove home to see the family, and from home we drove on to Fort Sill.
Got it.
The three of us. Hmm. And was assigned to the school, but not on the teaching level. I was was not a very good teacher, so I wound up being a pencil pusher in the school for 2 years on the administrative side. And I was in the house at Fort Sill on a February day. Telephone rang, and it was a fellow from Washington, D.C., saying that one of my friends from high school had got him when he was home for Christmas in San Diego. Toby Caverton was talking to him, wanted to find out what he did, and he said, "Well, I make assignments of artillery officers." And Toby said, "Well, take care of my boy, will you?" So he called up and he said, "Well, you've spent 2 years at Fort Sill. Where do you want to go?" He said, "I got a job in in Germany that I want to send you to." And I had heard enough stories from my friends that Germany was nothing but out in the field all the time, and that didn't appeal to me. So I said, "Well, what else you got?" And he called back the next day. He said, "Oh, I just have an assignment in Puerto Rico open up. You want to go there?" And I said, I looked out the window at the foot of snow that was outside, and I said, "Sure, I'll go down there." The interesting thing about that was I had to, since when he called up, after he called up and I thought I was going to Germany, I called Jack Bowers, who was at that time getting ready to marry your mother's sister, Jean, in Pennsylvania, and said, "Yeah, I'll be in your wedding," and got the dates. And when the guy called from Washington and gave me the dates, I was supposed to leave for Puerto Rico the day they were getting married in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. So I told the fellow in Washington, I said, "Well, let me work on this." What I told him the situation, was able to call, and he was able to give me a later date. So went to Jack's wedding in Pennsylvania, and then went down to Charleston and flew to Puerto Rico, where we spent 3 years walking to work. Loved it.
Yeah, those are really my earliest memories. They're all pretty much of Puerto Rico and other going to places in the Caribbean.
Yep, all over. We flew over with, I can't remember the person's name. I'm sure your mother still does. She was a redheaded female actress and married to a fellow who owned property in St. Croix, and we'd fly over in his airplane. And it was a water plane with pontoons on it.
We'd
fly over there and like St. Croix very much.
I remember the flying on that plane.
Yeah. I'm sure we can ask her tonight and she'll tell us exactly. It might have been Maureen O'Hare. I don't know.
Huh.
Somebody like that.
Well, we also had another brush with a movie star down in Baja, right?
Yeah.
Because Gammy used to like to go down to a resort.
In Baja, because that's where her friend, the Fishers, that got her the job in Bishop School, they had a place down in Baja.
Down in Cabo?
Yeah.
Okay.
And your mother was barely pregnant with Charlie. Yes, that was the winter of 65.
No, Charlie's born in 67.
It was the winter of 64. I was back from Vietnam. Mother took us all.
That would have been 67.
Yeah. No, it would
66. Have been 60. Born in 65. Charlie's born in 67. September is 67.
So it was 65.
So it would have been 66 going into 67 if mom was pregnant with Charlie.
You're right, 66. Yes. Yeah. It was mother took us all and took MG and his family, and we all flew from San Diego down to Cabo San Lucas.
Ah.
And that's where your mother was having
Well, the story I heard was that Desi Arnaz was at this place.
He was a friend of the Fishers.
Right.
Yes, he was there. And you were dancing with him, as I recall.
Apparently I played my little guitar for him. That's
that was it. Yes.
Yes. Can't say I remember that one. Be good to have a picture of it.
Yes. So that was when we came back and back to Puerto Rico, and your brother Paul was born down there, and now we're celebrating his 50th birthday this weekend. Oh, time flies when you have fun.
Sure does.
We came back then from there, and I recall when I got the orders for Fort Jackson, I put down, go back to Fort Benning. I put down on my preference sheet, but I put down Third Army area. Well, Fort Jackson is in the Third Army area. So when I got my orders, I went over to Colonel Cologne, who had been assigned, who had been stationed at Fort Jackson. I said, well, tell me about Fort Jackson. He said, it's the best secret in the Army, because nobody knew about it, and it was very good duty, which I think is proved pretty well true. I think we've all been pretty happy here in the 40.
Well, that was 1971.
When we came back in 71, yep.
Summer of 71.
Yep.
And the funny thing I remember about that summer was for some reason, we had to live in a trailer park for 2 months while we were waiting to move into our 4,000 square foot house.
You got it right.
And well, I don't remember why that was, but it was, you know, it's funny when you're that age, you don't know the difference. I mean, we had a...
You know, I don't know if I knew why it was.
Yeah,
I know that we went out, the fellow we were renting a trailer from, took me up to Two Notch Road, pointed down the road, and said, "That's where the middle of Columbia is coming pretty soon." He was pointing to what later turned into be Columbia Mall.
Huh. Well, he wasn't wrong.
Nope, he was pretty well.
Now you live further out than that.
Yep. But we had some, let me say, you went to Olympia.
Middle school, but A.C. Moore was...
A.C. Moore. We walked A.C. Moore.
Yep.
All three of you did.
Yeah.
You went to Olympia Middle School and then went away for one year at...
it was Christ School. But I'd been at Dreher for 2 years before that.
Yeah. You went to your senior year at Christ School.
No, junior year. And then I came back...
One semester and then went to Dreher.
Yeah, I came back to Dreher.
Charlie had one semester riding the school bus at AC4, and that was enough. He got a knife pulled on him a number of times, I think, on the school bus. So somehow we managed to find a new home in the Dreher area so he could walk to Dreher. Right?
Well, no, actually.
Wasn't that
it? No, I mean, he went to ninth grade at Flora.
At Flora.
And then he managed to get to Dreher in 10th grade. But so he and I.
Okay.
So we, my 10th grade, his 10th grade year was my senior year.
Right, right.
And then the summer that I graduated is when you all moved over to Heathwood Circle.
Okay.
From 151 Saluda, which was walking distance to Dreher.
Yeah.
So that way Charlie and Paul could go to
Dreher
without any question. Yeah.
And that was that's when Mac Rood was your soccer coach, right?
No, that was Kleinfelder.
Oh, okay. Who did Mac was your younger?
I think he was a coach when I was younger.
Yeah, okay.
That's right.
Because his wife now is the president, member of our Richmond Sertoma Club.
Ah.
And was the president last year. Whoops.
Well, but, what else? You got any...
I can remember you calling me from Louisiana one day saying, "Hey, we're down here. We came down at a road trip for the football game with the University of Virginia playing LSU. Had a slight accident."
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Don't think I want to remember the details too much, do I?
No, you don't. We don't need to get into those in this interview.
Yeah.
It is a story that still gets told, but maybe not for StoryCorps.
No. There are a number of stories which still get told about your growing up, but as I look back on them now, I think I enjoy them now much more than I did when they happened.
Yeah, that's so funny how life works like that.
Yep, strange. I hope you've enjoyed the trip as much as I have.
Absolutely. I appreciate you taking the time to share some of your recollections. And
well, at this age, I think you'll find that some of those memories may disappear on you, which in some cases may be good, right?
Right. But it's good to get them while we still have them.
Yep, you got it.
All right. Well, Dad, thanks so much.
Thank
you,
Key. Love you.
All right.
Glad you're here.
Yep, thanks. All right.